Sounds good. Thank you all for coming to our special meeting. I know they're coming fast and furious now. Thank you everyone for showing up. Let's get our meeting started. So first we have a roll call. So I'm here. Tim is not here. Hopefully he's coming. Simone, I see you're here on virtual. Jason, I see you're here. Derek is absent. Joe Zimmerman is here. Kim is here. Mike Mulligan's here in person, and hopefully Ruben will be coming in late. So that's our roll call. Approval of the meeting minutes from the last meeting as presented. One thing I noticed, Kim, were you at the last meeting?
No, she wasn't.
She wasn't? Okay.
I was not.
Okay, must have been the meeting before, I think, of that. Okay. Can we get a motion to approve last minute's meeting minutes?
So moved.
So moved. Okay, Joe. And the second, Mike? The second. Okay. Second. All those in favor, raise your hand and say aye. Aye. Okay. Number two on our roll call, on our agenda, excuse me. Chapter four, food waste with Pete. So Pete, I'll turn it over to you so you can tell us all about food waste in that exciting world. Thanks.
Great. Well, thank you all for your volunteerism and your knowledge. It's very much appreciated, especially taking time out on the fall equinox, which is tonight. So hopefully everyone is enjoying themselves. Yes, I am going to be talking about food waste. I also will preface that in terms of some discussions we've been having with the Department of Ecology, which have been very fruitful, no pun intended, around organics management in general. And so we probably will be bringing an addendum to this chapter around yard and garden waste and possibly a couple other organic materials, which would include possibly animal manure, and then the rest of our items, which is wood, will be addressed hopefully with our construction demolition chapters. So we may actually split into some new chapters, but that shouldn't impact the work and the review that we're going to do tonight. So without further ado, let me share my screen here and we'll get rolling. Okay, can you all see that? Great. Okay, please jump in with questions. You can use the chat box. Hopefully, Ember, we can be tracking that as well. Again, we definitely appreciate all the expertise that we've got in the house here, so don't hold back. We have had some initial review prior to getting this out to SWAC, so it's slightly polished, but it's still rough around the edges. We have shared this with the college. As I mentioned, City of Vancouver has done some great, given me some great feedback, as well as our staff. Our goal here is really to get this kind of to 90-95% so we can just continue to polish as we bring out and roll out these other chapters and hopefully get this thing all wrapped up here by the end of the year. So again, tonight we're going to be focusing on food waste, which is a component of organics management. In fact, it's by far the largest component. And so really, really the focus area if we're going to be dealing with organics management of any kind in our county or in the state, food waste is the go-to waste stream. As you can see, Washington State has an organics management hierarchy. And this is very small, small print, but hopefully you've got the chapter because it is written in the chapter. It's also available on the ecology website. But basically what we're trying to do is not make food waste to begin with in the first place, which is not easy. And, if we've got time towards the end, it'll be good to share some tips because I know, I've got some tips for sure. You know, if you take carrots and cut them up right when you get them and put them into a container with water and put it in the fridge, those containers will, those carrots will stay fresh for weeks. You might need to change the water every so often. And we all know the rubber carrot that has to go out. And a lot of people are putting the rubber carrots into the garbage. We'll talk about those tons. So first, we want to not make the food in the first place. Then, of course, you know, if we've got food that's going in the trash, and we have hungry people, clearly we want to feed people. And we'll talk about some of ecology's mandates and regulations and goals to really try to increase that. That next would be feeding animals. And then what's called on-site management. And when we go through that slide, we had several examples that were discussed in the chapter. Off-site organics management for us primarily is headed to the Dalles Port in Washington to a place called Dirt Huggers. We'll talk about that. Some also is going across to Scappoose. I don't know if anyone's been to Scappoose. They have a great steakhouse over there worth checking out. And then you can see Beaver Bark, where our compost from the county is going right now. Finally, there is a section here, which I do talk about in the chapter, that, you know, landfills can take methane gas. Methane's very similar to natural gas that heats our homes. And you can actually take that methane and either convert it into, clean it and use it as a natural gas and get renewable energy credits. Or you can use it on site by piping it over to an industrial facility. And in this case, at Boardman, Oregon, where our landfill is, they use that to dry onions. So again, using that material, finally, you know, the worst case would be just to put it in the landfill and have it burp out and create greenhouse gas. Thankfully for us, mostly that does not occur in this county, with a small exception we'll talk about. Okay, so anyone know where this comes from?
Where's the beef?
Exactly. So I really want to preface this presentation around tons, because we're talking about getting tons of food out of the landfill, whether it's to feed people, feed animals, or to turn it into compost. And I, as a garbage experienced guy in this field for a long time, I know what a ton of food smells like, looks like, even tastes like in some regards. And so just to give you an example of what we're talking about, one ton of food waste, which I know near and dear to my heart, is 85-gallon buckets filled with coffee grounds. And so as we get into our discussions, I want people to be aware, because we're talking about some very lofty goals here and some very large tons to try to keep out of the landfill with our team, our partners, and our transfer stations and other recyclers. So right now, I think we're looking for where's the beef. I want to start again. I'm going to repeat this a little bit. But ecology, they define organic materials, as I said, manure, yard debris, garden waste, food waste, food processing waste, which really doesn't show up in the landfill, and wood waste, which we are going to segregate out and discuss in our construction demolition, which is more appropriate. So as I said, we may come back with a little more information around yard and garden waste so we can turn this into a whole organics management chapter. Which would also suffice with kind of the direction ecology is going, and just makes good sense. One of the issues that we're trying to figure out right now, about 4%, and we'll talk what that means ton-wise, of the manure, it's actually mostly, in my opinion, and we'd have to double-check, and I've got some questions into ecology, but a lot of that's kitty litter. So really we're looking at food waste and yard and garden waste as our organics management. And today we're going to really be focusing only on food waste. So again, garden, yard and garden coming in the future, but not the tons that we're talking about tonight. So don't hold your breath on that one. So tonight we're looking at 58,000 tons of food here from Clark County that goes to the landfill. And the state wants us to reduce that by 75% by 2030, which is actually right around the corner. And then a large chunk of that reduced amount, they want to go to feed people. And so what is this food waste that's going to the landfill? How do we even know how do we get these tons? Well, the state does a study where they actually have sorters who go into the transfer stations and look at different loads as they come in and sort them in a whole variety of categories, 50 to 100 categories. And then they add up all that weight and they basically make like a pizza pie chart, which shows what's going where. And so of all the garbage that people put in their trash cans, their dumpsters, everything else, you can basically assume 14% of that is food waste. And that 14% breaks down into edible and inedible food. Obviously, we're going to have things that we just can't feed to people. Although you can make a pulled pork sandwich out of banana peels. And so that's a vegan option. We can send the recipe later. So the large component here really is around our vegetative waste. You know, that makes up about 11% of that 14%. Vegetative waste is going to be fruits and vegetables, coffee grounds, like I mentioned, maybe some eggshells, tea bags, paper filters are okay. And then we're getting into more of the nasty stuff, the meats, fats, oils, processed foods, grains, and all that other stuff. Which thankfully doesn't really add up to a whole lot. So just in terms of like banana peels and onion skins and carrot tops, somehow, and you know, they do a scientific study, by sorting through this trash, we got 46,000 tons of that stuff. And a lot of that we can feed to people. So that's the good news, job security. So this organics management law is called HB 1799. It was recently passed by Washington State Legislature. Some of the big ticket items in that bill are, as I said, cutting food waste by 2030, 75%. And also of that amount, 20% of that would be edible food that we get to people. And they also want us to increase the demand for processed organic materials like compost, and that'll be something that'll probably be coming in a follow-up add-on to this chapter. There are some requirements that this law points out. I'm not sure how they will work, but they basically are going to require businesses that produce a certain amount of organic material in a phased-in approach to compost. So clearly you can't pass a law that we're going to cut food waste by 75% and not have some teeth. So this is some of the teeth in the law, and our staff and our programs and our partners, we're going to need to implement that somehow. Also, really soon here, by the end of this year, we need to come up with some procurement ordinances. These really more apply to public works in the cities and the county around using compost in road projects and other public facilities. And so we're going to need to get right on top of that one. Again, this is information that will be coming down in our add-on with yard and garden waste. And then we want to get a jump on this, and we have included some discussion in this chapter. We'll probably need to beef this up a little bit. If you remember our second slide, that as of after 2025 plans, and we might as well be preparing for this, we must allow siting of organic management facilities. And that's huge because of NIMBYism. And so I'm not sure how that will play out, but we basically can't just stand by and say, oh, we can't do any food waste because we don't have any places to put it. Okay, so I'm going to go through this pretty quickly. I'm hoping folks have had a chance to look at the chapter that we wrote and shared. feel free to send comments to us at any time. As I said, we probably have 1 to 2 months that we're really going to be continuing iterations of this draft. And I want to really spend our time tonight on the recommendations and make sure we've got time for Jessica and get you all home at a reasonable hour. So source reduction is not making the food in the first place. And there's some basic tips here that we'll be sharing. I actually have been employing some of these myself, and they really do make a big difference. The one I've been doing, and my son gives me a hard time because it seems like there's nothing, no food around, but I just am shopping my freezer, my pantry. I'm trying to go find fresh fruit, but you know, there's no pizza, there's no Coca-Cola, you know, there's no ramen, nothing that he wants, but there's still tons of food, and that food has been languishing for a long time and eventually might not get eaten and get thrown away. So I've been putting it to good use. Feeding people, as I said, we got about 35,000 tons of edible food out there. That includes vegetative, fruits and vegetables, which is definitely a high need material, and then some of the proteins and processed foods as well.
Question?
Yes, of course, anytime.
The screen where you showed that tonnage, on the report, it referred to it as a state total, not a Clark County total.
Yes, that's a good catch. I will change the title of that. It's a state, the name of that table is the statewide disposed waste stream, and then we extrapolated our county data and tonnage off that. So I will update that from statewide to county.
Okay, so the chart is actually Clark County?
It's Clark County, yes.
Okay, thank you.
That's a good way in. Thank you. So again, we've got a lot, these are our existing things. We've got a lot of hungry people in the county. There are some websites that you can go to and do some of that work. Certainly, we need to partner better with our hunger organizations. But the feedingamerica.org says that our food insecurity rate, and there's a whole definition about what that means to be food insecure, is 10% of our 500,000 people. So that's 50,000 citizens right here in Clark County. So there is a great need in addition to keeping this out of the landfill. Another thing we can do is feed animals. This is spent beer grain, which is a great option. You can feed it directly to cows. It's a protein source. There's lots of different ways that we could be managing food waste in addition to partner farms. I know farms are very concerned about bringing any kind of pest or nuisance weed onto their facility, but typically food waste is going to be just fine because it's nutrients and can be managed. So again, we've been very successful, and we'll talk about some of our programs when we just collect food only. If that material could be used on site to feed animals with farm operations, that would be a wonderful use.
Hey, Pete,
yes.
It looked like Joe may have a question.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Pete, really quick. I'm sorry. Going back two screens there about food waste. One of the things that I would like to, sorry, I'm not trying to hijack your meeting here, but I'd really love to talk to Alan Hamilton with the Clark County Food Bank. I know that one of the problems that our food bank actually has in Clark County, if you can believe this, and please understand, folks, I'm not trying to talk for them. However, I have heard that they are actually one of our largest creators of food waste in the sense that they only have outlet for, you know, for so much food. Again, I am not an expert. I don't know their inner workings, but I do know that they have, you know, kind of mentioned from time to time that they actually are inundated with a lot of it. It really comes down to what types of food they're given. And they said from day to day, they simply can't they cannot give it away fast enough. Now, I just thought I'd throw that out there. That's kind of one of those variables that, you know, kind of throws a kink in the system, if you will.
Totally.
Joe, can I put a footnote on that real quick? Because I actually called the food bank for that.
Okay. And yeah, go for it.
The food bank accounts for 400 tons of food versus the 35,000 tons that referred to. So the food bank actually distributes 11% of I'll call recycled food. And the other thing is they support about 33 adjunct distributors. And Joe, to your point, yes, they do have a waste problem. Like a grocery store loses about 30% of its produce. So yes, the food bank does have that challenge on a portion of their food products. But one of the things that I asked them was that they estimated the total demand or request. Do they exceed it, or do they have a percentage of satisfaction? They wouldn't quote me a percentage of satisfaction, but they said on usable food, they can place every pound we can give them.
Okay.
So, but I think to your point, of the food that they get, what percent is legitimately, from a health standpoint, recyclable? That's a, I think that's where you're right as far as it being significant as contributing.
Right, right. Well, sorry, I apologize. I didn't mean to cut you off there, but that's, you know, potentially a question that we need to be asking those, what they call the pantries, the food pantries, such as, you know, fish and, I forget any of them. There's a number of different pantries. Like you said, there's how many different food pantries they work with. I'm sure that they have demand for all that food that goes out, but the question would be, you know, what percentage of that come, you know, winds up at the end of the day. I'm not saying it's a super high amount. I'm not saying it's 75% or better, but I'm sure there's probably some at the end of the day that still winds up in the landfill.
You're absolutely right. I think one of the things we'd be able to do would be able to get through this particular project. They're willing to work on this with us to be able to quantify that and find out where the waste is going and where it's coming from.
Right, right. By the way, one last comment, and I'll get off the line here quick. I actually was trying to work with Alan Hamilton on trying to get them to invest in what's called a manure spreader. Just for those who may care to know, a manure spreader really should be called a dry goods material spreader, because if you can put it in there, it'll spread it on a field, and to reduce their waste into the landfill from the food bank. And unfortunately, we could never just work it out before I left the Heritage Farm. So anyhow.
Great discussion. Thank you. I've been taking notes. So just moving down the list here from our hierarchy, next up is on-site organics management. We've got a lot of different things going on currently with on-site, and we do have a successful farm. Pacific Firestone Farms has been working with their berry waste on-site. They're also a farm as well as a packing plant. We've got some good one thing I do want to mention, and this is actually pulled out on this next slide here, is in working with our public health inspection folks, a lot of these just need to be tracked. It's not a game changer, but it is an important piece to note that folks do want to know what's going on, basically, is what's going on. So if you've got piles that are of certain sizes, then we do need to get notification if you're going to be doing on-site. A lot of our on-site stuff is like home composting in the backyard or worm bins, so very small potatoes. But when we do get into larger scale, we're going to need to make sure that obviously that information is being shared and done correctly. Out in Camas, there's a place called Northwest Red Worms. They don't only do red worms. They might need to change their name. So they're doing quite a bit with black soldier fly larva, which is BSFL is kind of, if you see that acronym. And they are currently using 300 pounds of those larvae. They look like maggots. They thought you could see them in your compost pile often on warm days. And they're diverting 50 tons of food waste right now. And we'll be talking in our needs and opportunities, but there are opportunities where we could possibly scale that up significantly. And it's also referred to as bioconversion. And so that would be on site in the sense of on a farm potentially. It could also be offsite management if people are sending their stuff there. So it kind of falls in between. I did mention here, I'd never heard of this until Sarah from our staff sent this. Feed the Orca, which is an aerobic system. This is something Southwest Peace Health is looking into to manage their food waste from their cafeteria and their large operation. We don't currently have any anaerobic digesters in Clark County, but those would certainly be on-site opportunities. They're typically used for cow manure and those other type feedstocks, and maybe not necessarily handling our food waste, but definitely an option out there. And then community composting, and we've got some opportunities there. There are some share apps where folks can actually, if they live in a multifamily or a small backyard, or they don't have the opportunity or don't want to compost. And I actually have signed up through these apps, and I just today had a 5-gallon bucket of food waste dropped off at my driveway. And so one thing to note here is, I guess I would call this civil disobedience. Technically, the city of Vancouver has regulations that you can't bring anything off-site to do backyard composting. So that's something that we have raised in this chapter and hopefully can work through and look at. Okay, offsite organics management. This is the one people may know a little bit about. We currently have two cities in Clark County, City of Richfield and City of Vancouver, that are putting their food scraps of all types, both meat, cheese, oils, fish, and the fruits and vegetables, in with their yard debris at the curb. And it's a subscription program. About 50% of the people subscribe to that. These were rolled out in the past several years. Certainly, we can, as we get to our recommendations, we definitely want to make sure folks who have that service available to them are using that service, because we already are set up infrastructure-wise to get that food out of the waste stream. And that gets trucked. It gets reloaded at West Van. I believe, and Derek's on the phone, I believe they call it the Oreo cookie. Where they take that food waste yard debris mix, and then they put straight food waste, and then they cover it back up with the yard debris, and they ship that off to dirt huggers. There's also 100 businesses that have carts. We have carts out at our schools. We've also got some shared carts that we're trying to work with. We have one at a multifamily. We've got several at churches. So, again, just trying to get these options for people who don't have the either don't have the cart in their own home, to have a cart nearby. And so that would all be shipped offsite and composted at a municipal composter. Okay, the last piece. Yeah.
I don't know why I haven't mentioned this to you before. Are you familiar with Jan Allen's work with the horse?
Yes, yes. And so that would be anaerobic digester. I believe there's a couple up in King County. They're great for, you know, a college campus type thing or something along those lines where they've got cafeterias, food waste. They're a smaller scale, and those would be great. What any you want to add, George?
Well, just that, you know, I think they were originally thinking about these as sort of like circuit things that you could move from one horse farm or hobby horse keeper to another. To it had to be of size. It's not a single horse kind of operation, but for those sort of small farm, gentleman farm kinds of deals. They're also work pretty well. University campuses are good, but there's a little marina neighborhood
up on Bainbridge Island where they support the marina and a half a dozen or so restaurants that are operating around in that area, as well as some other multifamily households. And the interesting thing for the purpose of the group, depending on how they're configured, they can either harvest the gas and bottle it for use off-site, or they can have it set up and run it through a generator and produce the electricity and work it back into the system or through the businesses. And I'm not sure what the, you know, the carbon load issues look like or the O2 loads look like, but I just wasn't sure whether or not you'd seen anything about that. So.
Yeah, very, very good. That's something in our needs and opportunities we might beef up a little. They look like shipping containers, so folks understand what we're talking about. And it's impactbioenergy.com is doing that. You can also make a series of these so you can link up the kind of the shipping containers as you add more food waste to them. So great discussion. Okay, so landfill with energy recovery, I've kind of talked about. Right now, one of the things, and I'm certainly the first who wants to impact positively our effects on climate change. The HB 1799 was a climate change written bill around landfills emitting methane. And I'm not sure how much escapes from Findlay Buttes, but I do know they capture and have an elaborate system of piping, covering all that material to keep that gas intact so that they can harvest it and turn it into renewable energy, get credits, and also use that for drying their onions and other things. So maybe Derek, if you've got any more input, feel free to email or chat or send me a contact. But I think we capture that here. And so climate change and some of those other discussions we will probably be addressing more so in our equity work and equity chapter, which is going to be done through our ecology grant. Okay, so that's kind of the preamble. And really what I was hoping to do tonight with SWAC is to kind of go through these recommendations and really more just flag anything that might be, I wouldn't say controversial, but, you know, something that you should certainly be aware of. You know, most of this is pretty straightforward. And then, you know, this is a good opportunity, especially Laura, you know, feel free to weigh in, especially around food only, you know, if we're missing things. But we talked about conducting our campaigns to prevent food waste, our workout at the schools. And again, when we're doing our recommendations this go around with this plan, we really are looking at trying to assign some high level responsibility, identify any kind of major cost, and then also come up with our success metrics so that when we get ready to implement this plan over the next 5 years, it's not going to take anyone by surprise. So that's what those FTEs in the responsible party are. Some of these I just kind of assigned just to kind of has a placeholder. So you can see they're highlighted in certain spots. And our success metric is really, you know, me just kind of taking a first stab at things. So as someone owns this action, they certainly should feel free to revise it and let me know. The sad thing is this doesn't all add up tonnage wise to the diversion numbers we need. So I do think it's important that we at least, as I said, you know, where's the beef? We got to actually show tons coming out of the landfill, going to feed people and getting composted. And so that's really what our mission is. So we've got schools, they're doing quite a bit. And the final recommendation on this one, and we can come back to these, but you know, my hope tonight is we can just have a motion to move these forward. is around businesses, doing waste audits, incentives for businesses. So currently we're looking at trying to roll out some county will cover the cost for businesses to begin composting so that they get in the habit and they see how much food they are wasting. And then as part of that, trying to drill them in on getting that food donated. And there's a whole host of reasons why people don't donate their food. So that's a tough nut to crack. Okay, I'm going to the next page here, page 18. I think we've got four pages of these recommendations.
Hey, Pete?
Yes.
Looks like Joe's got another one for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Real quick, Pete. Hey, you talk about businesses reducing their landfill, reducing their waste and composting. Are we talking, okay, are you talking about food-based businesses or, help me out here, what types of businesses are you?
Yeah, this is a great question. I'm really glad because I did fly right over that. And this is one of those areas Laura might be able to back me up on. Some of these things the college is kind of sorting through as we go. It's kind of an unfunded mandate. So, you know, how do we really regulate these businesses and force their hand? But if you look at the target date on that third recommendation on this page, by 2024, which is really the end of next year, businesses that are producing, and then we've got to figure out to know who these businesses are. If you're producing 8 cubic yards a week of organics, then you are required to be composting if you're not already. And that it's a phased in approach. So we get to 25, it's 4 cubic yards of organics. And then I'm not quite sure how this one works, but this is straight out of the law. By 26, if you have any business with 4 cubic yards of garbage needs to have organics composting. But I know there'll be a disclaimer because if they have no organics, like if they're a metal shop.
Right. I'm sitting there, I guess where my brain was going was same thing there, Pete, is if they're a software company, you know, about the only thing you can do is ask your employees to throw their food scraps in the garbage. Now the place where my mind goes is the restaurant industries, whether it's McDonald's or, your favorite, pub, I see where we can make huge inroads, by asking them to separate off their food scraps.
Totally.
And I would say just from experience, we've had the same 100 customers on the commercial accounts for over a decade. So there is no, there's no voluntary interest from commercial entities in Clark County to join the food waste program. So there has to be some form of mandate or something along those lines to get them to that point.
And
it's so economics.
Yes.
Pardon me?
Do you think that's what it's going to take to get further penetration into that customer base?
Yeah, I mean, Pete knows it probably better than I do, but that customer list of 100 customers has not really changed over the life of our commercial food waste program. And we've advertised that we have a staff person who works with commercial businesses and outreach and is constantly talking about the benefits of, having an organics program or cart. And it's not priced particularly bad, but, you're talking about businesses that aren't set up for that dynamic. It's one more thing they have to do. They have to find the space for the cart and then they have to pay for it. And that seems to be enough to really not motivate businesses to want to participate.
Hey, Derek, do you mind if I ask you a real quick question? I'm going to take a flyer here that the business entities that are participating in that program are not necessarily the ones that you wish were participating in that program. Is that is that right?
Well, I think that we have some really great partners in it. The Hilton in downtown does a really good job. It takes some education and, it takes some work to get them right. So there's definitely some good ones out there, but a lot of them also are part of, they are larger organizations. Maybe they have zero waste mandates at a corporate level. And so that pushes some of it. And then you have some local businesses that just, they want to do the right thing and they're involved. And the school system's also been a really great partner, along those lines. So they've you know, they don't necessarily have a mandate at all the schools, but most all of them have some sort of food waste program, which has been helpful. But it's a spectrum, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
Great. Yeah, I totally agree. So we've got to figure this one out. It's the biggest one that we've got. I was going to just quickly say, you mentioned McDonald's. They do have a buy one, get one free, get one for $1. So anyway, I took my son there. And they probably do pretty good food waste recycling. So we'll have to see. Okay. On to our next page here. Again, I think this is page 2 of 4. So I think we're right on schedule time wise. Thank you all. Research what, if anything, commercial businesses are doing to donate and divert food waste, identify barriers to participation. So this is one of those big ones. You know, I think anyone, not anyone, but, you know, if you're in this business and you've been working, it's like, oh, I know Safeway. I've been in the back. I know they've got this Gaylord. It gets filled up and some farmer comes and takes it away. But it would be really good to know exactly what's going on at these large retail box and how they're handling it, where it's going, and then if there's opportunities really to get more donations going. And so that's what that one's about. Reduce food waste at restaurants and food service businesses through waste measurement, tracking, planning, and portioning. Again, these are just different strategies that can be used to get folks. I never liked the portioning one. I like the biggest portion I could ever get. But maybe I'm not, maybe there's others that don't want the giant portion, and you can get a half portion and get it for half price. Now, that would be a good deal. Conduct outreach education related to curbside organics recycling collection. Launch countywide campaign with expansion of programs. So our next recommendation we'll be talking about is kind of getting more curbside yard debris customers this organics food option, other than just city of Richfield and Vancouver. And then when that happens, do a massive campaign and education around that, so folks who have yard debris and have always been putting yard debris in their carts know and will begin also adding their food waste. And there are many hurdles to just getting people to collect food waste in the kitchen, whether it's fruit flies, which I've got right now. And just, you know, if you really, you have to make the effort to keep the food out.
Pete, I got a question for you on that one in terms of doing countywide rollout. What sort of infrastructure do we need at our transfer centers to handle that increased waste? Do we have the capability to do that today? Or do we need to expand kind of the backbone of that system in order to make that feasible? Because if all of a sudden we roll, hey, we've got organic food waste for everyone in Clark County, but then we're just stockpiling it somewhere and it's not being used for its purpose, like, I guess that's my question, is what kind of backbone do we need in place to make that happen? And are we close to that? Or is that going to require a big investment of money?
Yeah, and that's a great question. I know there are others here who can speak certainly more to that. But from my limited understanding, we kind of have a bottlenecking delay right now because that material has to come into West Van to be.
Yeah, that's what I've always heard. Like, yep. That's why we have countywide composting right now, is it's just like not feasible, the amounts we can't put through our system.
Exactly. So we'll be hearing some more through our regional system study. I know next month we're looking at, or next SWAC meeting, bringing in some of the ownership and negotiations. So, you know, these discussions are underway to figure that out. And then, of course, ecology has given us some teeth that in 2025, you know, we need to be citing these things and having that opportunity here in the county. So one thing that we are talking about, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but we have another recommendation, the county's yard debris contract. And I think we've got 22,000 customers on that, currently just doing yard debris. That contract expires, end of June, 2023. And so we are looking at ways, in that new contract to encourage this food opportunity, which would involve some kind of additional processing because we do have that limitation. So good. Very good.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of demand in my neighborhood for, I know a lot of people in my area have the yard waste already. I live in a suburban neighborhood, you know, and they would, I know a lot of people would love to be putting their food waste in those carts today. Ruben, you were going to
say. Yeah, I would.
Issue.
Yeah, so my family has, we've done this before where, and actually we did not know, this is back over in Spokane County, that you could do combined a food with yard waste.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of it definitely is an education. One probably obstacle for us in Richfield is that yard waste only comes every other week. And so when you're talking about the capacity and infrastructure to handle this, there may be resistance as you know, it's kind of mentioned with, you know, pest vermin and other odors of having your food waste outside or in your garage for 2 weeks waiting for it to be picked up. So I would highly recommend that you look at the capacity and infrastructure of our facilities to handle kind of what is, you know, I think a great idea, you know, once we can get the public to really, you know, catch on.
Thank you. Good discussion. I'm just going to roll through these. I want to make sure we've got enough time for the next one. Expand food waste, but definitely jump in with observations and comments because these are excellent. We want to expand food waste that are multifamily. They, you know, that's going to be a hard one, but definitely a goal we've got. Seek grant opportunities, as I mentioned, to support local startup of bioconversion. And that again is using black soldier fly larvae. You know, you might have heard about mealworms. So there are other different ways. There's vermicomposting with red worms. So looking just into that as an opportunity. Provide education funding equipment for our community composting efforts. Again, these are all looking forward. We basically have a lot of strategies that we need to get going because it's going to take really everything. Okay, then I think I've just got four more to go. And I know we stacked in a lot of recommendations here. And we'll also have one on getting that ordinance passed for the compost buying by our public works folks and others in the city and the county, cities and county. Backyard composting, we want to continue that. That's very successful. Partner with local farmers, as we talked about. Transport residential food waste to farms if there is that potential composting. I don't think that actually necessarily needs to be residential. That could be anything. So maybe I'll take that word out. And then that one we were talking about just a little bit ago to issue this RFP, which, you know, it expires. There are 2 1-year extensions. So, you know, we are trying to figure out when best to bid that out. If there's clearly no processing capacity, then maybe it makes sense to push that out and encourage during that time additional processing so we can add that. And then we can align with what the other cities are doing and have a more uniform approach and roll out a large campaign around that. You know, one thing that it is a bummer, you know, on a hot day, that stuff sitting out there for 2 weeks before it's picked up, you know, how do you overcome some of these hurdles? And our final one, just in from Sarah Kearns today, expand local food processing infrastructure, including more capacity and or efficiency at existing facilities. Actually, you know what? I didn't get hers in here. So that'll come on the next one. It's in the report. So this is what we were talking about. The success metric on this would be some kind of new reload or composting facility. And that's a big one.
Yeah, I was going to mention that along those lines. Is like, it's great that we send all our renounced compost out to Dirt Huggers, but then we truck it out there. Dirt Huggers makes this compost, and I imagine they truck a lot of that compost back to the metro area. So the carbon from just this trucking, you know, in terms of like, if we're looking at siting a new facility, maybe at that new facility, siting a composting facility right there, so we're not, you know, doing all this moving of materials before we're making it usable. If we can have that composting available in Clark County, which it sounds like going back to your previous stuff about citing, you know, in terms of them not denying citing a composting facility. It seems like Van West or some rural area would be a great spot to have a composting facility here in Clark County where we can kind of do it all at once instead of trucking it all around and increasing our carbon footprint.
Yeah, this is the biggie. And so, as you point out, you know, they charge you coming and they charge you going.
Yep.
Thank you so much for your time, your feedback. And as I said, we'll continue to polish and get you revised drafts as appropriate.
I also have so much fun. This is Mo. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're a little echoey, but we can hear you. Go ahead.
So is there a cost to this added to a customer's regular month bill?
Simone, I'm sorry, we can't hear. Can you type your question in the chat? You're not coming through. You're garbled.
Is it better?
Slightly.
So it's like there's an echo. Two microphones are picked up.
Yeah.
Do you have a radio or some other broadcast device going in the same room with you?
I don't know if this is any better.
Not, no.
Sounds like you're underwater.
Yeah, maybe try some disconnecting and reconnecting, and we can circle back to your questions. I'd love to hear it.
At the moment, it looks like both Kim and Joe have their hands up. It looks like Kim was first, though.
Yeah, let's maybe move to Kim while Simone disconnects and hopefully can come back.
Kim? Hey, everyone. Just real quick question, and sorry, I skimmed through the materials you sent me, but how much of a focus is there in outlining how food waste or can really have an impact on affecting climate change and mitigation and that sort of bit, if you're going to be touching on that in there, because it is identified as one of the top ways to try to help with that. And since the city of Vancouver, you know, climate change is one of our top three priorities that we're putting a lens on with everything, I just want to make sure that that is being captured as part of your food waste chapter.
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm going to follow up, and when we talked about that fifth of six on the hierarchy, the landfilling with energy recovery, which is what primarily we're doing here in Clark County, Findlay Buttes recaptures their methane. I am going to follow up. I'll follow up with the landfill, maybe with Derek, just to find out if there are emissions measured and what those greenhouse gas maybe in terms of vehicles travel, just so we can kind of get a feel for what it is we're looking at coming out of that landfill. And then the biggie is, you know, to get this food onto our grocery shelves and into our houses, you know, the farmers are burning fossil fuel in their tractors. You know, there's fossil fuel to transport it. There's fossil fuel in the refrigeration. We don't have at our tool, because really we're looking at tons diverted from the landfill. But it did come up. I know Laura and Ecology, they're very much eager to have that piece. You know, we want to dive into that in our diversity section, our equity work and chapter. So, but I'm open to suggestions, but some of those are very difficult to quantify. But if we can come up with a recommendation with a metric, I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, or at least outlining it, or, you know, it's always good to at least make it aware and if be open then to possible metrics in the future. Because like you said, you know, it's actually the biggest impact on the life cycle is actually where it's created to begin with, like is most things that are, you know, end up in the landfill or otherwise is most of the carbon or environmental impact is actually you know, happening, whether in the farm or in the mine or whatever. So by the point that, you know, you all know it, and that it reaches to where we have to manage it, but if we could prevent it from being overly created to begin with or overly produced, you know, and that's where that great education of food waste prevention is so key. And yes, it's not quantifiable, but it's so important to highlight as a possible way and measure to mitigate and prevent climate change.
You know, Kim, I think you raise a really important point in terms of, you know, what are our emerging and really likely to be our enduring metrics for solid waste? Because you're right. I mean, there's actually quite a bit of research going on. I don't know how much of it is right, comparing different management strategies and their carbon production results. And I've heard some, you can look up David Alloway's work. He's out of DEQ in Oregon. He touches on some of those numbers in some of his work. City of Seattle has supported research by an economist named Jeffrey Morris and others that have, and there's a network of folks doing science around this, looking at the greenhouse gas implications of different strategies. And I think we're sort of in a weird place in the development of our metrics, because in solid waste, we're still looking, and this is driven by the state, primarily by tons. And I'm not confident that that's the best metric. And what's more, I would be willing to guess that in 5 years, it won't be our chief metric at all. And so one of the things I'm really interested in is, A, putting this comp plan to bed, and then, B, rolling up our sleeves and digging into what I think is the really important conversation, which is exactly what you're talking about. You know, how do we integrate greenhouse gas emissions into our calculus? Because we're just not there in terms of the numbers that ecology is using to drive our investments right now.
And sorry, one more thing, Joe. Well, actually two more. Have you done the metrics as far as, like, you know, tons wasted per capita? I mean, because that is kind of a measure of overconsumption.
Pete, do you have anything for us on that?
I haven't. I mean, we have done the per capita landfilled, and then we could, you know, extrapolate that down to food waste based on, you know, the ecology snapshot waste characterization study.
Kim, you've been in this business for a while. Have you seen anybody else that's produced any numbers like that?
Who was the question for?
Well, Kim's question was whether or not we calculated any food waste per capita numbers. And so that's why I pushed it back to you. And then I'm intrigued because I've never heard anybody bring it up, but it seems like a logical place to go. And I'm just wondering if Kim has seen anybody else working with those numbers.
I can't say that I have. I think we did at one point at Clark County in, like, one of our reports at some point. Might have been an internal thing. But I haven't seen that. But I also haven't dug too far into, like, maybe what King County or even another state is doing as far as that goes. But it just came to mind, like, that might be a good way to measure it. Because, yeah, like, I mean, if you're just looking at tons over time, I mean, that could just be a representation of population growth you know, or representation of a boom in construction or demo. I mean, it's not necessarily representational of like changes in people's behavior. And the last question I had was there any place in this for like the free fridge project or other things like that?
Yes. So I believe that we mentioned the free fridge in the chapter. I'd have to find out.
Oh, sorry. I might have missed it.
No, that's totally fine. And then I did have a note just to, with that one, follow up with public health, because I know something had come up in the past around the reuse and storage of that food. So
it has come up as an issue with the food waste folks within public health, but I don't remember the thread of the argument. And then, Mike, I see your hand in there.
Yeah, just actually a question to the group, just listening to you. And I'll just say, based on, you know, I've had some limited exposure to WSU. Here we've got the campus. They've got an environmental studies major, and WSU, if I understand it right, was originally started as an agricultural-focused institution.
It is an ag.
And we're talking about shipping food, organic waste back to farms to potentially create compost, right? To what degree have you incorporated anything from WSU in your considerations or metrics calculations or the modern farm, so to speak? Have they been approached? Do you have a connection with them? Are they participating in your evaluations?
Ecology works really closely with WSU out of their Eastern Regional Office, and they'd be easy enough to check in with and see
if there's metrics,
what they're doing out there. There was a guy named Mark Fuchs years back that was really doing a lot of work, and I can't remember. He was an engineering ag professor. I think his last name surname was Ma, but I don't quite. They did a lot of the early research in this state on biomass, and they were doing.
We're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
We got them here. It would be nice if we could get them incorporated.
I don't know.
In the discussion,
Laura. Laura, are you still there with us? Laura?
I am here.
So, hey, is Mark Fuchs still with your Eastern Regional Office? Do you know?
I don't know, but I don't work in that office on a routine basis.
Oh, I know.
Sorry. I don't know. I could find out.
It might be interesting to trace that one back and see if he's still doing the biomass research. And if we can draw connections with the different organics research they were doing out there through WSU and see how it relates. Their inventory looks a lot different, but there was a lot of research done a while back on statewide production of biomass.
George, if I could interject real quick, our local extension agent is a gentleman named Justin O'Day, and Justin would be a great connection. That is, you know, directly a Clark County extension agent, and he would be great to involve in this project, you know, and we could do it locally instead of having to do it, you know, across the state.
Yeah. Pete, are you ever in have you met him in your comings and goings with the WSU folks?
Yes, I know Justin well, and Joe, that's about getting food waste used back on farms. Just want to make sure I was following the train.
Yeah, that would be the general concept, sure.
Well, Mike's one of his great passions is for cross connecting the WSU research endeavors, student operations, and some of these problems we're working on. That's one of the areas where he really seems to be trying to help us make connections. So the question sort of, and Mike, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, is you know, what ideas do the, what kind of contribution can our local WSU folks make to our research ideas and thoughts on future pilot and possibilities. I'm sorry, Mike, it's your thought.
No, actually, it's not my thought, it's theirs. And here's a caveat that has evolved unintentionally, but it's kind of evolved, and I actually got a call yesterday. Washington State University has a thing called Capstone, where they take seniors from various specialties and they give them a project to focus on. Okay, you've got a lot of serious questions to try to quantify. It would be great if we could make some of these topics a focal point for some of these teams and see what analysis they come up with while we're trying to come up with the same answers. Mm-hmm. And put our heads together and see what we can come up with.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Yeah.
And I am going to follow up on it. You brought up something earlier, and I'll just throw this out. Having been a business owner in this state, if you could find a way of getting a credit on the B&O tax for participating in organic recycling, somehow, anything to redo, you want a hot button, find a credit on the B&O tax. And you'll find a lot of people jumping in.
If I could jump in there, first of all, Mike, I got to tell you what, we do so much food waste recycling, they should pay us on our B&O taxes.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, and I gotta throw out there. Now, the one thing I had never shared about myself is I am a person who I finished my bachelor's degree later in life. I was 37 years old when I got my bachelor's from WSU. I was a business major. But the last class that I had to take at WSU was called entrepreneurship, and so it was what they did was it was a class where they partnered with a local, business. Okay. And, some of them were businesses, nonprofits, things like that. And essentially had a team of business students, keep in mind, these were seniors, all of us were seniors, and we probably kind of did some problem solving for these businesses that, some of them were in good, good status. Some of them were in kind of failing status, and some of them were just mediocre. And it was just just an opportunity to use our new skills, with these businesses. I got to tell you what, I think this would be a great opportunity, and by the way, think of this very similar to Leadership Clark County. I know many of us are familiar with Leadership Clark County, and it may be a great opportunity, to go to the WSU Vancouver College of Business and see if we can get some young impressionable minds to, put their heads together, if you will, on something like this.
I'm going to jump in here. The program Joe's talking about, I actually was a program administrator over there. It was after you graduated, Joe.
Okay.
So I've got all the connections to the administrators and stuff, if anybody wants to pursue that. And he's right. It's a really good program. It's through the sales program and entrepreneurship. Right. And the teams, there's usually a group of four that work together, and they take a section and put this great presentation together. Everything is done very confidentiality, and it's good work, and they get credit for it, and we get a work product.
Right. Well, now I got to tell you there, Kimberly, that the only problem with it was that we irritated Pullman, because our end of course scores blew them out. All of the satellite campuses did better than Pullman. So anyway,
that's very true.
Yep.
I'll leave it there, but you're right.
Yep. Question here. Does anybody mind? I've got a couple of little comments here real quick. Is anybody, am I interrupting anybody if I ask those?
I know that we were coming to you. I know that you had your hand up. And after you are finished, it looks like Simone is back. So when you're done, if Simone, if you would like to try again, let's do that.
Okay, sounds good. Hey, first of all, I want to throw out there, and I'll throw it up here in the chat here real quick here. There is a documentary, sorry, word escaped me for a second here. There's a documentary out there that I think all of us probably need to watch, or at least, familiarize ourselves with. It's called Just Eat It, if you can remember the Weird Al Yankovic song parody of Michael Jackson's Beat It. It's called Just Eat It, and it's about a husband-wife who try to live for 6 months on simply food waste alone. And the short version is that after a year, and I think they went a year and a half, and they finally got tired of giving food away to their friends every time they invited them over, simply because they had so much food they collected from food waste that once they learned where to go to get the food waste, they supported themselves for, like I said, for like a year and a half or something like that. The next question I have a question here, and Laura, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I have just a concern. Coming from a farm that does, let's just say, a fair amount of compost, okay, and mostly, you know, horse manure and things like that. The question I have is, if Clark County was to get into the compost business in a big way, whether that's private, public, what have you, how big are we talking before all of a sudden we're talking that, you know, we go from private composting to, okay, now you're going to have a, a non-permeable slab and make sure that runoff and things like this, you know, that essentially how big are we talking before all of a sudden we're, you know, talking about having a professional facility where, you know, runoff and the like is all contained?
Hey, that's a great question, Joe. I always say that when I don't know the answer. You're supposed to laugh now, right? But the truth is, we have facilities folks who manage that stuff, and I'll check with Derek, who's my counterpart in solid waste, and he will be able to answer that for you. I'll get back to you with an answer on that one. But you're right, there is a size that hits a permit level and requires, you know, and the health department folks are part of that too, because they're the ones in the counties that would do the permitting for that. Ecology doesn't do that, but we certainly provide input and that sort of thing. So, but I know that Derek would have, not Derek Grant, but Derek at Ecology will have an answer for that.
Okay, yep. Derek at Ecology, okay.
Yeah, Derek at Ecology.
Derek Ronta.
No, Derek at Ecology is the facilities person. His last name is Rocket, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Rocket.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rocket. So I'll get back to you on that. Thank you.
That's just we could pull that out of 173.350, which is the chapter of the Washington Administrative Code that addresses that. It really comes into play when you add food waste in it. There's a lot of stuff that they can do when they're handling yard waste and other kinds of things, that once you start pushing food waste into it, it changes the regulatory framework a bit. So that's one complication. But historically in Clark County, we went through a number of siting efforts, I don't know, 25, 30 years ago. There have been multiple efforts to get composting operations off the ground. And really, the environmental program that creates, that most often runs afoul of food waste, is odor. It's hard enough to manage the odors just in the peak lawn mowing seasons, let alone handling it. What's that? And you start adding other food waste into it, it gets more complex. And of course, meat and cheeses, the high protein stuff, starts attracting the vermin, and it gets kind of difficult. What's interesting, though, Joe, is that, farms can get around a lot of those things on the farm themselves. It's when you start centralizing some of those feedstocks to cook them up as compost, that's when it really gets tricky. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought that trying to co-locate, some of the large biomass producers like farms with the other side of the equation, with the food waste and the other materials,
make sense. I've always wondered, you know, why we don't see more examples of sewer utilities combining forces with solid waste on these issues, where they have experience in managing biological processes, and with a little co-investment might be able to join things up. I mean, but anyway, that's just me running off.
George, it sounds like you got her solved. Let's do it, buddy. I was going to tell you though, you know, that smell is money. That's what the smell is, George.
You're preaching to the choir, but I've been looking at some of this stuff for a long time. I've particularly been tracking the bioconversion processes. Jan Allen, for example, is really doing. He's got some great prototypes, and his success placing those facilities in university campuses where they have large on-site residency populations, on farms, or even running a series of farms, or in mixed neighborhoods is good, you know.
Right.
But it's not easy.
Hey, if you don't mind me saying something here, okay, not that I'm different than anybody here in this meeting. I got to tell you what, I have no problem at all sending an email to any one of our legislators right here and now if you want to. Hey, what if Washington State floated a bill in Olympia that said that the odor of compost is not I see Pete giggling over there. That the odor of compost is, you know, is off limits. You know, that you cannot live, you know, you cannot sue or complain or, you know, change any operation simply because of the smell of compost. I think that that's a reasonable bill in Washington State, especially with these requirements that they're essentially I almost said forcing down our throat, and I apologize if that sounds terrible. But
so,
you know,
Joe,
let's
go on a couple of things for you real quick.
Yeah.
First of all, over the last 10 years or so, there have been a number of efforts, some of them successful, to try to make it easier to site and operate and harder to close down a composting operation. So there has been activity and positive activity over the last decade or so in that effect. And my impression is that we'll hear more about funding support for some of these kinds of activities. It usually takes longer to line up money than it does to get everybody together on passing legislation to create new requirements. And one of the things that I understand is in consideration is, if you've ever looked at your garbage bill, there's a fee in there, the refuse tax, which goes to support the Public Works Trust Fund. And ironically, it goes on your garbage bill. It's a percentage of the bill that becomes dedicated to the Public Works Trust Fund, but historically has not been eligible for solid waste projects. And that's been a bone of contention for public solid waste managers in this state for decades. And my impression is that you're going to see a run at making some kinds of solid waste projects more eligible for funding from the Public Waste Trust Funding Fund, which is a way of getting sometimes highly discounted loans out and sometimes virtually free money out to help capitalize some of these facilities. And there's usually, and I don't know, Derek, maybe you could share some insights. You know, is WARA been active on one side or the other of helping liberalize access to that money for solid waste projects? Are you aware?
I'm not aware of what the work they've done on that topic. I don't think they have done much.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's It's also been edgy because over the years there's been some concern about making that kind of money available to the public sector but not the private sector. But I expect, Joe, that in the next few years we'll see increasing efforts to find money to push to these requirements, because otherwise, you know, it's going to be tough.
So can I jump in here for a moment?
The other chapter four?
We do seem to have gotten off on a tangent. I wanted to check back in with Simone and see if she still wanted to try and say something, and then we probably should make sure Jessica has some time. Simone, did you still want to try?
Yes. Is this better?
Much. Oh, much better.
I'm on my work computer now, so. So I have a question. A couple of things, you know, coming from the small towns and cities and kind of rural folks, is there a this may be getting kind of far ahead of where we are, but is there going to be a cost added for this? You talked about, I know on Pete's slide, it had mentioned bringing the service to the small towns, Le Centre, Battleground, et cetera. Is there a cost that's going to be added to their monthly bill? Does anyone know?
I mean, I can jump in real quickly. That's a great question. You know, we would be having, there are different ways we can do it, but if we go with a competitive request for proposals to provide that collection service, then, you know, we would be looking at the service and the rates. And then those would all be brought to the local jurisdictions before we we do that.
Okay. And
second question.
There's always a, with that kind of capital investment that's going to be required to launch a program like that, there's always going to have to be a return on the capital. So there, I would imagine there will be a cost to the homeowner, but who knows?
I can tell you that even the smallest costs or increases are, it takes a lot of convincing, I think. And the other question I had was, council, have you presented to them on county council? Have they had any input on this at all? Are they supportive?
They have to approve it.
Yeah. So that'll be the next step in the process, Simone. After we approve our comp plan, it'll go to their county council.
I mean, do you know if they're on board, or is this going to be, I mean, I'm supportive of it, but is there any feedback of what that might look like?
We're going to have three new members on a 5-person council after the first of the year. So it's kind of like throwing a dart at a wall. We'll be having discussions with them. We will be coming out to all the municipal governments, and going over it with them. Ultimately, the municipalities have to sign on to it. So we've got some sales work to do with them. We'll be going out to get some feedback there. It's a big process.
Okay. And then my last question, or kind of comment, is obviously coming from, again, the sort of more rural areas, there is a lot of concern about the sort of wild land urban interface issues. And, especially like out where we are in Le Centre, there's sort of like these developments that have kind of been scattered around, and they're in between sort of these wildlife corridors. And what's happening is there's a lot of stress about people seeing, you know, that have come from other areas or come from cities and are seeing wildlife, you know, like we had cougar sightings, and there was a black bear walking down Le Centre's main road, you know. So when you put those bins out with meat scraps and, you know, all that, I'm just telling you, there's going to be, whether it's valid or not, but that's sort of part of the conversation out there with so many new folks coming in and these scattered developments. So.
Okay, thank you, Simone. Yeah, that'll be another consideration for those areas in terms of if it becomes a regular occurrence. Let's go ahead and move the conversation forward and try to get to Jessica. Sorry, Jessica, our priestcraft conversation went a little long, so we'll turn it over to you on construction and demolition.
Sounds good. Yeah, I'll try and go as fast as I can. I'm not sure how long it'll take me, but let me get my screen going. Okay, so the same chapter, our targeted material streams chapter, is covering food waste, and it's also covering construction and demolition waste, which is what I'll kind of give a crash course in here. So I'll summarize that section of the solid waste management plan and kind of show you what wastes are recycled, how much we're doing right now, and what opportunities there are to improve what we're doing. Construction demolition waste can be summarized as like these six different categories. So bulky waste is kind of your catch-all classic construction demo waste. It's heavy, it's bulky. That might be asphalt, bricks, carpet, concrete, ceramics, large metal objects, salvaged building components like doors, windows, cabinets. And this would also include wood and tree stumps, land clearing, debris. They can also include deconstruction materials. So this is from a demolition project where the builders carefully pull apart pieces of a building or whatever project they're tearing down. And they normally pull, you know, architecturally interesting items for reuse, doors, windows, large wooden beams, light fixtures. So deconstruction is kind of the environmentally preferable way to do demolition projects because you can salvage those components, because the next category, demolition debris, is where you just kind of smash everything together with a bulldozer and then landfill the entire debris pile. And construction projects will also have hazardous and special waste, but I won't really discuss those today. We kind of lumped that into our hazardous waste chapter, but demolition projects could have, you know, asbestos, lead pipes, contaminated soil, other types of special and hazardous waste. And new construction will have paint, adhesives, solvents, other hazardous items like that. And number five is inert waste. So this will be some of the bulky waste, but it's specifically items that don't decompose and they're not contaminated with any hazardous material or biological material. So these can be recycled in some cases, but they often go to an inert waste landfill. So this would be like cured concrete, glass, bricks, maybe metal. And number six is new construction materials. So that would be new building projects having leftover lumber, brick, insulation, pipes. And these are pretty easily recyclable because they're clean and they're produced on a predictable schedule with a project. So this is a screenshot from the state's waste composition study that they published recently. Recycling and reuse of construction and demolition materials it relies almost entirely on the diligence of the builder or the consumer. So a lot of construction debris ends up in the landfill. So this is showing, you know, overall disposed waste stream and I've got a laser pointer. So wood debris, 13.5%, and then construction materials, 10.7%. So combined, that's kind of the material we're talking about. It's over, you know, 24% of what's being landfilled in the state. So it's a large chunk. It's just as much as organics when you think of it as one category, wood and construction materials. So diverting more of this material from the landfill is obviously desirable, but there aren't many options here in Clark County. There are no facilities right now that accept mixed loads of construction and demolition waste. There was an attempt years ago at West Vancouver Transfer Station, but that attempt didn't work. So to recycle these materials, you need to separate everything, hire either a pickup service from various recyclers, or self-haul each material to a different business that can recycle it. Like this location can take yard debris. This one takes clean wood. This one takes rubble. It's hard, and you have to be pretty diligent, like I said. Oh, and I just noticed Derek's hand is up.
Thanks. Hey, do you know what percentage or like of the wood debris line? Is that clean wood or is that just all wood?
I think that would include painted wood as well.
Okay.
I'd have to look closer. I think clean wood is, Pete, you just quoted it. I think it was like 5% of that percentage. I can double check, but yeah, that would kind of be a catch-all for painted wood, which can't be burned, for example, because of air quality emissions. A lot of wood waste used to be burned as hog fuel. No longer desirable to do that with wood. So, let's see, where did I leave off on my list of notes? Right, so Waste Connections does recycle some construction demolition waste, but it's largely from construction customers that are trying to achieve LEED certification on their projects or other green building certification. There's a few different ones. So Waste Connections helps them at their sites. They can subscribe to different drop boxes for different materials. And in this case, the contractor has to be pretty attentive to make sure there's no garbage contamination in the bins and that the right material goes to the right place. And Waste Connections tracks all that data, which they use for their certification process. But that's not the norm for the construction or the DIY renovation industry. Not everyone is as diligent as the ones seeking LEED certification. And so the three transfer stations in Clark County that are owned and operated by Columbia Resource Company, they get a lot of C&D waste as self-haul garbage. So most of the C&D material going through the facilities is landfilled, and it's been that way for a really long time. So if we want to, you know, make progress on recycling this material, because it's a huge chunk of, you know, material going to the landfill, we need to somehow boost the recycling availability in the region. And there's a method that King County used a few years ago that I'll kind of describe, that we could model a similar program to them. So the basic idea is to make an ordinance to ban certain construction and demolition materials from being disposed as garbage, and then instead direct that material to a designated recycler for that material. Since we don't have any large C&D recyclers in Clark County that can take mixed loads of material, we would basically propose this ordinance, and we'd ask for larger C&D recycling companies to send us proposals of, you know, how they could fill this need in Clark County, that they could open a facility here. And the ordinance would be an incentive for them, for a C&D recycler to come operate here, because we'd be able to direct material to their facility and they'd be able to work successfully here. And we, you know, as county staff, we would go through the process, review proposals with the goal to enter an agreement with a recycler directing material to them. And that could include I don't know, specific C&D waste. We probably have to define rubble versus roofing material versus metal, and you know, all that would have to be worked out. But we can, you know, make standards that they would have to comply with, you know, compliance with all regulations, permitting laws. They need to have good techniques for screening material for garbage contamination, so they don't accept garbage or hazardous waste and other non-accepted wastes. You know, they'd have to follow UTC garbage hauling rules and all that, all those little details we could work out in a request for a proposal. And inviting like a big C&D recycler into Clark County could have, you know, there's benefits and then there's, you know, there's some unknown stuff. So a problem with C&D recyclers, kind of with any maybe solid waste recycling business, is they sometimes go out of compliance with the rules. Those are the problems that Melissa Sutton is always troubleshooting with all the facilities in the region. And for C&D specifically, this typically includes stockpiling. They haul garbage or they send recyclable material to the landfill, or they use unapproved processing methods like burning or burying on site, other stuff like that. But one benefit towards doing this material versus like the organics we were talking about is that construction waste is largely dry and inert. So, you know, odor and vectors wouldn't be a concern for that, for the public and both enforcement. So it might be a simpler endeavor to go through. And if we do go in this policy direction, you know, we'd have to clearly define those standards in the request for proposals. So, they go through the permitting process with public health. If recyclers do open operations here, you know, there'd be a ton of benefits, even if in practice it only captures 30-40% of all the C&D waste going to the landfill, that's still a lot of material to be recovered. In a conversation with King County staff, he said that their recovery had reached about 57% the last time that they did a real data overhaul. So it's capturing a lot of material with a similar program in King County. Wider benefits would be, you know, the obvious environmental benefits that we talk about, recycling over landfill disposal to, you know, reduce the need for harvesting new materials from the planet, be it, you know, rubble or lumber. And as Pete was talking before, there is a requirement in the organics bill for recovering clean wood waste, which is a chunk of what's going to the landfill. So this solution here would also have benefits towards reaching the state's organics standards, organics recovery standards, that is. And then creating this, you know, public-private partnership type system invites new businesses into the county, creating jobs. And the general idea is to get a marketable commodity out of what is currently garbage, which is good economically. And if it works, I think this model could be applied to other materials in the future, like mattresses and other big items that are hard to recycle. Some benefits to the three transfer stations in Clark County I've listed here. So I don't have the exact like overall percentage, but I did find one statistic. It was from our last county run waste characterization study in 2012. Non-residential self-haul customers brought in 52% of the construction waste through self-haul garbage. So 52, like half of the commercial construction waste was from self-haul customers. So if we send more of those self-haul customers to a designated C&D recycling location, that reduces the traffic at the transfer stations. And this has been a concern here brought to SWAC over and over again. You know, traffic's bad. There's line out into the highway at Central Transfer Station that has been unsafe at times. Diverting some customers would improve the traffic, reduce wait times. Fewer cars and trucks queuing up means less air and noise pollution at the facilities, which the staff and neighbors would probably appreciate. And overall, less traffic would improve the customer experience of using the facilities to responsibly manage their garbage, recycling, the household hazardous waste that they're there to engage in our system. And reducing traffic would reduce some stress on the infrastructure. So we're talking the bulky, heavy, you know, rocks and concrete that don't compact in the garbage compactors. So that's a specific concern. The garbage compactors and the shipping containers can be damaged by material like that. So you keeping it out kind of helps improve the resilience of that infrastructure and keeps the system moving. And garbage transfer, you know, we don't like to talk about it because, you know, environmental benefits of recycling, but garbage transfer is, you know, essential to public health and environmental health because we're talking about, you know, putrescible material, pet waste, you know, all the non-recyclable things that we need to get rid of. It's damaging to us and the environment, and keeping that system running smoothly without any maintenance delays is good to build resilience in the infrastructure. So that's the general idea, make an ordinance to direct some recyclable construction waste to a new location to be recycled. An alternative to that that we think as a program is viable is for us to research more C&D recycling solutions within current contracts and infrastructure plans. So this would be a bit of a delay. It would let us kind of gain more base knowledge on the, you know, the recycling markets, infrastructure needs, general diversion methods to build into future operations, such as, you know, developing a new transfer station. We can develop a construction demolition program alongside that. This would obviously delay, you know, developing C&D recycling. It would be reliant on our contracts that have long duration periods, and it takes a long time to site new facilities. You know, so in the meantime, we do research in the hopes of finding, you know, finding the right solutions to add to the next solid waste management plan. And research is always a good thing. You know, it can help us better build a system for C&D waste. It just would take a lot more time in comparison to using King County's method that has worked for them. And the last recommendation for this kind of subchapter on construction waste is to update our educational resources that list what those current recycling locations are. We had a toolkit, I think it was published in 2003, that listed all the different recyclers, but that's, you know, definitely out of date by now. So it's on the list to get this updated to make it easier for those diligent builders and DIYers to find the recycling options more easily. And this is something that we could collaborate with, you know, the City of Vancouver and Waste Connections educators on. To create and distribute. So this is the final table, just three recommendations for this. And, you know, line one is the ordinance directing C&D waste to an authorized facility. Line two is the alternative to that, to do more research and find solutions within our plans for new transfer station. And line three, you know, is the recommendation for the new toolkit and getting a list of all those recycling options for helping people find what recyclers exist right now in the region. So we're doing good on time. I think we have enough time. I'd like to get your group's recommendation. You know, do you like the ordinance? Do you like, you know, waiting and doing more research? And saving a recommendation for the next update of the plan? Those are kind of the questions that I have for you, and I'll open it up to the room now.
Jessica, can I ask a quick question? This is Mike. Is there a tonnage estimate for C&D for Clark County for, on an annual basis? Because part of attracting a potential entrepreneur industry, they would be doing a cost benefit analysis based on the total waste they'd be processing.
I think it's something I could estimate if I did a little digging into our waste characterization studies. The state study did include tonnages, but I can't remember what they were. Let's see if I can find it really fast. I think the whole state, there it is. The whole state was 1.3 million tons of construction demolition in landfills. So we're
of the state population, so we could use 1/5 of that maybe as a ballpark for tonnage that we generate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we used to do periodic waste stream characterization studies here in the county. While I was gone, we stopped doing that. So now our data source is extrapolation from the state. Okay. So, and your calculation there is as good as any.
Is this information that we track at our transfer facilities where we pull in and, you know, yard waste, construction waste, or household waste?
No, not ongoing operations. Derek, correct me if I'm wrong, but we used to do periodic, you know, every few years. I don't remember what the time frame was. Maybe it was 5 years. Waste characterization studies where we would go out and pull samples from the floor and do our own version. And I don't know, maybe we just found out that our study was consistently so close to the state's numbers, we decided not to. I don't know if it was a budget issue. I really don't have a clue. I've been wondering that myself, why we no longer produce our own numbers. I mean, if they really are close enough to the state's numbers, you know, why go through the expense? I'm sorry, I can't. I'm embarrassed I can't answer that question.
And I, you know, Clark County, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, is the fastest growing county in the state. The amount of construction that's happening with residential and stuff that we see at the waterfront, which are the amount that we're generating, I'm sure is significant, but then also I know, especially over the last 10, 15 years, the builders have become very savvy at estimating almost down to, you know, certain percentages of error of how much material they need to build. So there's two things going on. That's cost incentive on their part. So, you know, I can say there's a significant number of construction debris that's being deposited into our facilities because I pass by it twice a day and I see the lines. And so, you know, I think, you know, we probably could extrapolate, you know, what our volume is based on some assumptions, but we also need to consider that per capita we may be, you know, on the higher end, whereas, you know, versus a county like Grant County or Spokane County, where may not be.
Jessica, can you talk a little bit more about Seattle's C&D facilities? How many do they have? Are they public? Are they private partner? Are they just kind of explain so I get just an idea of what exactly, if we were to follow that model, what we would be looking at?
Yeah, good question. They are private companies that the county has contracted with. I think they're there are several facilities, and some of them are, they define them as a transfer facility, and then others are a C&D recycling facility. So the transfer facilities, they collect and separate construction demolition waste and then send it for recycling, from what I understand, and then the other ones kind of do it all on site. So they'd be an on-site recycler. So they have that kind of distinction in their system. But I don't know the exact number of facilities that they have. I think it's 4 to 6.
So there's just a second. There's King County's operations, and then there's the City of Seattle's operations. And the City of Seattle set up a slightly different approach. They certified C&D haulers. I think it was copied somewhat off of King County's program. They don't operate their own facilities, so they get certified, and then the flow is directed to the certified facility. So they're slightly different, and I don't know how much comparison we've done to the two models.
Derek, you had something?
There was a lot to add there, but I mean, I'm probably a little too close to comment too much on this. Hang on, sorry, I have to go pick a kid up from practice. I was going to say, we do reclaim a pretty good chunk of wood at the transfer stations in Clark County right now, clean wood that's available. We report, the comment came up about what's reported right now at the land or at the transfer stations. We have an annual reporting process that involves
closest thing we have right now that shows wood products or other types of material that are being recovered from the general waste flow that come in the door. But I think it's pretty easy to do any kind of analysis that you want to do. I don't know why it stopped. I agree, but it's an easy process to do at this point. And the last thing I would say is, there are a lot of the construction companies around town. There are C&D facilities, dry waste facilities in the Portland area. So, a fair chunk of material does leave Clark County to go to those quote-unquote recycling facilities. We're constantly chasing other Dropbox haulers that haul, recycling boxes that typically have
Oh, we lost it, Derek.
As soon as we get into juicy details, he's out of your way.
Derek, would you support getting back to doing those periodic waste characterization studies?
Oh, yeah. I think it's great. I think it's a really good asset to be able to understand, how we can best achieve the overall goals. And that's a key part of it. You have to have those metrics in order to understand where where you are and where you're going. So. I do think that, in conversations we've had, with Clark County, I think that we've got some plans in place to, look at C&D in the next few years as the facilities evolve. The problem is just obviously space and permitted space to do what wants to be done. And, we've all been over it, but the county has just grown so fast. Become difficult to do what we need to do on the permitted space we have. So,
absolutely. So I hear you might be more inclined to do more research, or I'm just kind of curious to speak for everybody around the table. Back to Jessica's question, where do you all think we should go right now?
I mean, obviously, the more conservative approach is to do more research, but I would be curious to see, I don't know, politically, kind of taking that calculus of what the county council would think about a new ordinance, directing the creation of a C&D facility or trying to get one. I think that might be a little challenging, but that's just my gut intuition. I would probably lean towards creating one myself, but
Yeah, I think this would be a recommendation that the council would probably flag, and we'd have to probably have more conversations with them on it. But, you know, there's nothing stopping, for example, Waste Connections from being one of the construction recyclers if, you know, if we go in that direction, honestly.
Yeah, if we put out for an RFP, anyone who wants to put in a proposal can submit a proposal for it. And maybe we don't get any, and we're just going down the same system we have now. One thing kind of I was thinking about when reading this chapter was like trying to get the low hanging fruit in C&D of like, I don't know how much like roofing material, you know, because that's already so segregated from most construction demolition. Like if we can be recycling that somehow, you know, and like carpet and things like that that are already kind of segregated, more niche than just, you know, complete demolition in terms of recycling those types of things. I don't know what sort of facilities. I don't know. I know Clark County doesn't have any, but I know in the Portland area, there's definitely some asphalt shingle recycling, and, you know, maybe partnering with those people in terms of, once again, it comes down to space at our transfer centers, but having, you know, separated drop boxes for asphalt shingles somehow, you know, and we have that as a specific drop area, and carpet pad, that those things that might be a little more easily recyclable and not as hard to sort, you know, in terms of having those at one of our transfer sites and making that an option for, I know a lot of the C&D we get is from cell halls, so I don't know how that works with commercial stuff necessarily or where that's all going, but that was just.
Yeah, and I think the other cautionary tale is always on C&D is markets, just like any other commodity. Markets are highly volatile, and things like asphalt roofing, they come and go. You know, there's somebody doing it this week, and the next week they're gone, and it becomes garbage pretty quickly. So, you know, it's a real challenging dynamic in that sphere.
Yeah, the asphalt 1 year, gypsum the next, it comes and goes pretty fast.
I I'm kind of biased, but I think it's a good alternative for you know, the county to include it in the franchises to impress it upon the franchise holder to provide these services to the county. And that way the county can better regulate it and maintain that relationship rather than, you know, chasing down three or four different, recycling facilities that may or may not be doing the right thing each week. Again, I'm kind of biased on that, but I think the Clark County system is very unique, and I think it allows for a lot of collaboration in that area.
A question. Do you think an ordinance that would require the self-hauler to actually do a little bit of sorting? And so, in other words, they're not just dumping a complete mix, but they would be sorting, let's say, the wood from the asphalt, from the metal, from the whatever. Do you think that there would be... would that help, let's say, Waste Connections as a recipient, having it, this C&D stuff, in effect, roughly pre-sorted before it's delivered, or at the time of delivery? Could you have an ordinance that would encourage that?
That may be hard for, you know, from the source to do that.
What do you do?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything quite like that.
It's done by equipment, heavy equipment, and then how do you effectively do that? I think that's maybe where we're going. We want to be kind of like we have, you know, maybe taking single stream construction debris and maybe segregating it between asphalt and concrete, you know, asphalt. But I think right now, unless there's some practical means.
Yeah, would it?
Okay. That's a good point.
One of the other unique dynamics in our market area is our location next to Portland. So a few years ago when asbestos regulations changed in Oregon, you know, the small haulers in Oregon just all said, screw it, I'm going to go across the river to Waste Connections and do that. And so, you know, before we could get a handle on what was going on, we saw a huge influx of construction debris because, you know, they just could go across the river. And we're not an enforcement entity, so we can't necessarily fine people or do anything along those lines. Once we passed our own asbestos regulations, you know, it flipped back the other way, and then we saw the construction small haulers in the Clark County area taking all their material down to Portland and taking it to, again, quote-unquote recycling facilities down there, even though it was potentially asbestos-containing material. So it's a real difficult relationship between the two market areas, and if they don't work together on it, it can you can put an ordinance in, but you'll just drive those construction companies to other areas to dispose of their material because it's just easier for them to do it, cheaper for them to do it, and you know, if they don't have to hire bodies to sort on site, then they'll just take it to another site to dispose of it.
I see Jason's hands raised.
Yeah, the only other concern I have with that, by creating an ordinance to force that, which is going to increase cost for the builders, which then increase cost for housing. And we all know that we have an affordable housing crisis. Interest rates are going up. I just don't see that as a viable option.
And to that point, I was going to say the same thing. We got two choices, really. We have forced compliance or incentivized compliance. And I feel this would be a forced compliance, which could backfire or be resistant, even if it is approved. I think it's where we need to go. And the concept is where we need to go and focus on. I think there's a definite need there. But I think we need to roll this out in a way that people see the incentive to do it, and a lot of people will do it because it's good for the environment, it's you know, bringing building practices and reducing waste, but for a lot of people it comes down to the dollar sign, and manpower is a dollar sign, so you know, there's definitely some concepts we need to think about to
and just to add about the cost. So rubble, for example, if you're going to pay garbage tonnage to dispose of rubble, it's going to be a lot more than what you would probably pay to recycle it at a lot of the facilities. So the labor would be more, but maybe disposal costs would benefit the builders. But that's something that would have to be figured out exactly. So
I think that's part of the education component to be able to show, hey, you know, if you just throw this waste away, here's how much you're going to pay. If you spend a little time and manpower and equipment power to recycle what you can, here's how much you'll pay, and you know, let's compare the cost difference. I think those are ways that we can, you know, influence that market, if you will.
Well, the jurisdictions, to be honest with you all, the jurisdictions that have been most successful in having influence on this waste stream are the ones that have staff time that they can dedicate to developing relationships with the builders to design projects and proposals that sort of fit together. I mean, there's, and, you know, that's one of our weaknesses right now is the decision about whether or not this waste stream is the one where we should be, you know, trying to shift more resources to create that staff time. Because, I mean, if the development community doesn't like it, you know, we're dead on arrival anyway. And I don't know, I mean, you know, up in Seattle and King County, there's a lot of very big ongoing collaborative projects going on among the development community and the building community and the solid waste operations. And they have staff dedicated to groom those relationships. I expect there's more C&D operations going on than we're aware of, because they do kind of shift back and forth between state lines. I don't know, you know, I don't know if it's the right time for Clark County yet. And I'm out of school. I don't mean to rain on your parade, Jessica, but
not my parade. I'm just giving the option. So yeah, I just wanted to add before I let you talk, Kim. construction waste has been neglected for just a long time. We haven't recycled, you know, very much for decades. So this was kind of, you know, the wide idea to jumpstart the system. You know, this is one thing that we could do. Or it's, like I said, it's going to be years and years of planning work to do something within our current plans. So that's kind of why I've tried to, you know, give everyone a heart attack with this presentation. But
it's good stuff, Jessica, but it's like you're doing haz waste, you're doing land clearing debris, you're doing C&D,
Yeah, my recommendation all along had been the research one, but just in the past 4 weeks talking to King County staff and getting a better idea of what how their program works at, you know, recovering about 50% of the recyclable material and kind of creating the recycling markets. Like Derek said, the markets don't stay for very long, but, you know, if we push more material in, maybe it can help sustain them a bit. That's just a theory, but I'll let Kim talk now. Your hand up.
I mean, all of these can kind of be happening simultaneously too. I mean, the toolkit is a good first step that can be happening simultaneously to the second option as you outlined. But at the end of the day, especially when people are just looking at bottom line numbers, it's going to take an ordinance in order to create behavior change that actually is in the direction of the public good. So, I mean, it can try to like build appetite to those points. Or I think somebody said something along like incentivizing, mandatory or something. And so, you know, you try to make the easy choice, the right choice. And sometimes that's by creating fines or, I mean, the easy choice, right, is to just dump all your hazardous waste into the river. But nobody does that anymore, right? Because you get a giant fine for it. And so we just have to develop that norm change and behavior change, which comes from fees and fines and ordinances, but you can lead up to it with exactly like you've outlined. So, I mean, I'm for all of them, you know, but again, it's more of like a timeline and getting up to that point.
We've gone over time a bit. So should we let this kind of, you know, stew and think about it, and we can talk about it a bit more at the next check-in?
Sure. Why don't we make that the first item on our agenda for the next SWAC meeting, is circling back, and our SWAC members can think maybe a little bit more about which of these two options Jessica presented they like better, or maybe we can come up with a better alternative. That sounds like a good plan to me, if everyone else is okay with that.
Very much so. I think there's some actual technology that's existing that could be considered in our solution.
People online, does that sound like a good plan to you guys? And then since we're over time, we can wrap.
As a reminder, our next meeting is on the 6th in only 2 weeks. Is that something that we feel we have enough time to go over all of this?
I think so.
Thank you for that. Nope.
Yeah, I think 2 weeks would be enough time to think about a little bit more and weigh the pros and cons.
Is there anything you'd like to see Jessica do any more research on or dig into a little bit more between now and then?
It's just such a huge topic that to actually get benefit from research, it's going to take months to do.
That's
the recommendation, is to do that, because we can't do it within our current timeline for the solid waste management plan.
Okay. Well, having said that, the last item on our agenda is public comment, which I think we're all non-public here, appears. No one's snuck into the Zoom meeting, Amber?
Got a couple of people who are not regular attendants. Amanda from City of Vancouver, if you have anything you want to shout out, you're welcome to at this time. Other than that, it looks like everybody's pretty much our regular attendance.
Okay. Can we get a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
I'll second. Okay. Let's adjourn. Thank you guys for coming.
Nice to see you. Appreciate the presentations.
Yeah, thank you guys for your hard work.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Good night. Bye.